is Cascadia Public Radio.
That's the one, that's the one. Come on now, let's go. Yeah! Hey, hello, and welcome to Unbought and Unbossed, Canadian political news and views. This is show number 145. Today is October the 28th, 2009. Unbought and Unbossed is an independent voice. Gee, I've never said that before. Unbought and Unbossed is an independent voice dedicated to presenting and discussing the political and social issues most relevant to Canadian citizens. This show contends that 9/11 is Canada's single most important issue because the self-inflicted attacks of 9/11 are being used as the justification for the current overthrow of our democratic and sovereign nationhood, turning Canada into a corporate-driven plutocracy. The official story of the 9/11 terror attacks and the ensuing war of terror are deeply troubling and are at the forefront of this radio program. I strongly encourage listeners to question what you think you know about today's world events and to analyze the motives behind our traditional news sources. Each week, new segments of Unbought and Unbossed offer further evidence for these incredible claims, which are either omitted or distorted by the mainstream corporate media. Turn your television off. You are being lied to and conditioned to accept this madness as our inevitable future. We must work to return the future of the human race to its rightful owners. That's you. Hey, very nice. Of course, that's Bruce Coburn with Actions Speak Louder. We're also going to hear from DJ Shadow and Ashley McIsaac as I tell you what is on today's show. So what's on today's show? I've got a telephone interview with Dennis Shaw. He's the president of the BC Refederation Party. What we're going to be talking about is they are putting together a rally, the BC Refed Party that is, on the HST, the Harmonized Sales Tax. So we're going to be talking about the rally and what this HST is all about. So Dennis Shaw is an ex-military, as well as a retired Nanaimo elementary school teacher. He also runs a small organic farm in Nanaimo, as well as he's homeschooling one of his grandsons. Well, 8 years ago, Dennis was one of the founders of the BC Refederation Party, which is a provincial party that advocates changing the BC political system so that the people have political power. After only its second election, BC Refederation Party is now the fifth largest party in BC. Well, we know 1, 2, and 3. I wonder what number 4 is. And I'm sure the BC Refed will take number 4 next time. So maybe I'll tell you a little bit about this rally at the Victoria Legislature. This is taking place Thursday, November the 5th. This gathering to protest the HST on the steps of the Victoria Legislature between noon and 2 p.m. This gathering is organized by the BC Refederation Party. However, they are inviting all parties, groups, unions, businesses, organizations, and individuals that are against the HST to join them and to speak out on this issue. BC Refed believes that this issue transcends party lines and is something that requires a unified effort by all British Columbians. The ability to veto bad legislation such as the HST proposed by any government is one of the core values of the BC Refederation Party. That is why they're 100% behind any initiatives to stop this tax and the subsequent loss of authority, and why they will be promoting the People's Initiative, which was begun by former Premier Bill VanderZam. Okay, so they do invite all British Columbians to join them November 5th at the Victoria Legislature Building to show a united front against this proposed tax. If you want more information, you can keep listening to the show. Very nice. Okay, let's move on to a couple announcements here. You know what? President Obama declared the H1N1 flu a national emergency. Yes, indeed. They've had approximately 1,000 deaths, which they claim is due to this strain of flu. However, approximately 36,000 Americans die of the flu every year. So, you know, we're at less than 3%. And a national emergency is being called. This does not look good. As far as the Canadian numbers, as of earlier this week, 86 Canadians had died. Well, so they claim, to the H1N1 pandemic. However, 2,500 Canadians on average die every year due to the flu. So 86 is very, very, very small. So if you're reading the daily propaganda newspaper pieces, they're pushing that that fear. And you got to get that shot. You got to get that shot. So that makes me very, very skeptical. And I'm sure as hell not going to be getting any shots. Okay, so what else do we have? Oh, I've got a good one here of a Democratic congressman from Florida, Alan Grayson. Well, he sticks it to a Federal Reserve attorney about the role of the Federal Reserve. And boy, this guy is tough on this Federal Reserve employee. And man, you got to be pretty clever and be able to think on the ball when you're being grilled by a, in this case, a congressman, and to be able to lie that quickly. It really is a talent. I don't think I have that one. Let's carry on. This is an audio piece. It's called America's Growth Industry. And this is not very good. So what do you get when you have high unemployment? Well, you get Baghdad reenlistment. Yep. Basically, this year the Pentagon is reporting that it is a record year for new recruits. Very scary. You don't have a job. What are you going to do? You're going to join the Army and go kill some brown people and steal their resources, I guess. At least you got a paycheck, right? So very, very frustrating. Okay, so the clip that you're going to be hearing is audio footage of the biggest reenlistment ceremony in the history of the United States. It was held at the Al-Fa Palace in Baghdad. And, yeah, isn't that something? Okay, moving on. As many of you know, I'm putting together a conference. I'm calling it the 2009 Truth Convergence Project Uncensored. And we're going to be... I'll talk a little bit more about that as the evening progresses. This event is Sunday, November 29th at Vancouver Island University, the Nanaimo campus. I have six different speakers, six different topics. They have one thing in common. They're going to be giving you urgent information that, well, our governments and our mainstream media either ignore or distort. Yeah. So important topics, looking at food safety, this false flag flu and the vaccine agenda, the dangers of cell phones, as well as our wireless revolution. So looking at technology, and, well, it's probably not that good for you. But, well, you've got to have the latest gadget, don't you? Let's see, we're also going to be talking about genocide, both local and global, as well as monetary issues, and war criminals and the war of terror. Those are the six topics. So that is an all-day event, November 29th at the university. Those of you who pledged during one of my two fund drive shows, you're getting in half price. So that's a neat thing. Good for that. There's quite a few people. Maybe about two dozen, actually. There was quite a few. So I'm hoping that everyone has pledged. Actually, there was a pledge. And it was for $350, and it's by the Roberts Creek Vice. And that's really cool. So I have a brand new business mention, but this isn't a mention. It's just groovy people. And what they want me to remind you is that silence is complicity. So there's a lot of nasty stuff going out there, and we need to inform and let the government know that we are not down with what they are up to. So... Congratulations, Roberts Creek Vice. And I'm really happy that you're you got a business mention on this show. Good for you. Okay, I may or may not, depending on time, get to a book, David Icke's Guide to Global Conspiracy and How to End It. If I do, I'll be looking at the final chapter. He's calling it The Shift. I'm going to be looking at the topics of, well, the not the importance, but the value of fear. If you are a community that lives in fear, well, you don't have a lot going for you. You're a couple steps back, in fact. And however, the answer, in part, is using your intuition. So we may or may not get to the David Icke piece looking at intuition. I hope we do. It's a fantastic, fantastic piece. I think that about does it. That was kind of early. So, I do have one other thing. I wanted to mention that I have an article here from, believe it or not, the National Post. A little bit of truth slipped through one of their episodes last week, one of their issues. And this comes to us from Michael Fumento. And it's looking at the World Health Organization's political pandering. And what it is doing is, crunching some of the numbers. And why is the World Health Organization pushing this this pandemic when people aren't dying? You know, why are they going to give us a shot from, well, companies that aren't very reputable, and they've got some poison that they want to put in your arm? So this fellow, well done, Michael Fumento, breaking ranks from the National Post and, well, acting like it's a newspaper all of a sudden. So well done to them, to him, I should say. Okay, so let me see. Let's move on to the weather update, and then we can get on to that conversation with Dennis Shaw, the president of the BC Refederation Party. Again, we're going to be talking about the rally on November 5th in Victoria at the Legislature Building. He's going to give us an in-depth explanation of what the HST is all about, and that's a good thing. I haven't covered that topic on the show yet, so this is a good time. Okay, so weather. Alrighty then. Okay, so that is the weather update. Gonna be wet, and it's gonna be dark tonight. So I'm gonna put on a couple short audio clips here while I'm getting Dennis Shaw on the phone. First off, we're going to hear from New York State healthcare workers as they rally against a forced vaccination. They're basically being told that if you want to keep your job, you're going to get a shot. And so this is the corporate media take on this event. And then to follow the that thread, we're going to hear a song called Don't Inject Me. It's the swine flu vaccination song by Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. So that's what you're going to hear, and then we'll be back with Dennis Shaw, president of the BC Refederation Party. There we are. This is the Unbought and Unbossed show on CHLY. We're also online at www.chly.ca, where you can listen live streaming. Okay, friends, let's move on to the that short news piece on healthcare workers rallying against the forced vaccination. And then a swine flu song from Michael Adams. Okay, friends, here it is.
Healthcare workers rally in Albany against a state mandate requiring them to get the H1N1 vaccine or lose their jobs. Under an emergency regulation issued by the state health department in August, all healthcare workers have until November 30th to be immunized for both the seasonal flu and H1N1. The state will get its first doses of swine flu vaccine next week. Many are reserved for healthcare workers, but some workers say the H1N1 vaccine has not been fully tested and they don't want to be guinea pigs.
I've been in healthcare for 30 years total. I believe as an American, our rights are being assaulted.
It just comes down to the freedom of choice. We no longer have that freedom of choice to keep our job.
Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says the H1N1 vaccine is safe and produces a powerful immune response. New York is the first state to mandate vaccines for healthcare workers.
The CDC says more than 1 million Americans are already infected.
It's perfectly safe for children to get vaccinated.
The swine flu's coming back like a viral attack. It's like 7 to 6, you gotta cover your back. But not with the vaccine, don't give in to that. Because those medical quacks are making money off that.
They wanna inject you, infect you with the vaccine. They say they protect, but they reject your immunity. And if you protest, they arrest you and they lock you down.
Can't have people like that walking around contagious. The truth is outrageous. Don't you know the drug companies made this flu? And if you're thinking you wanna evade this, then you gotta say this.
Don't inject me, don't infect me.
Don't stick that needle in my arm and chemically wreck me.
Don't inject me, don't infect me.
Don't stick that needle in my veins and medically wreck me.
Don't use me, don't abuse me.
Don't push your medical lies and try to confuse me.
Don't trick me, don't you dick me.
With that needle in your hand, don't you dare try to prick me. Don't you know the swine flu is paid by man? Pharmaceutical scam, it's all part of the Big Brother population plan. But the thing I don't understand is why they're in Mexico City in an unmarked military van. They don't want you to see the remedies. You can stop influenza with vitamin D for free. Herbal medicine is all that you need, but they can't charge a $50 fee. And let them,
they inject you, they infect you.
They stick that needle in your arm and chemically wreck you.
They use you, they abuse you.
They say they're saving your life, but they really confuse you.
All you parents, grab your kids and shoot them up just like guinea pigs. Inject your teens and your babies in the crib. And when they get paralyzed, that's when you realize there's no way to undo what you did.
The big drug companies are making the killing, collecting the billions and getting away like a James Bond villain. Cause they're willing to do almost anything just to make money with the flu vaccine.
Okay, there we are. Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, with his song on Don't Inject Me. Okay, so like I promised, I have Dennis Shaw, the president of the BC Refederation Party, on the other end of the phone. Dennis, welcome to the Unbought and Unbossed Show.
Well, good evening. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, you're a pretty busy fellow from what it sounds like, so thank you for taking some time out. Now, the BC Refed Party is putting together a rally in Victoria on November the 5th. Can you tell us what that is about, please?
Yes. The HST is due to be brought into BC by the Campbell government, and an organization headed by Bill Vandazam, the FightHST.com, has organized opposition to this HST.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're aiming to do is start a citizens' initiative under the BC law in March. And if they can get 10% of the voters,
yep,
in each electoral district in BC, a referendum must be held.
Okay, okay.
And if the referendum says veto HST, then the government has choice. They can either go along with the people and veto it, or they can ignore the people, as they usually do,
mm-hmm,
and just go ahead. Now, if they go ahead, then there's a second possibility for this organization, and that is to recall Premier Campbell,
mm-hmm,
in his electoral district of Vancouver Point Grey.
Right.
And there was a recent survey done by Environmentix, and apparently, was it 85% of the people in BC are against the HST, but 42% of the people in Campbell's riding, Point Grey, sorry, that was somebody interrupting me at this end.
Not a problem.
42% of the people in Campbell's own riding would sign a recall petition right now.
Wow. Huh.
Because, of course, he said he was not going to do this, and we believed him. He was voted in the election, and he's still premier, and now right away he brings it in.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, the BC Refederation Party, one of our main platforms is that we should give the people more control over the way BC is governed. We are in favor of binding votes between elections for the people.
Binding votes.
Binding votes. In other words, this is very similar to the Swiss system that's been running successfully for 150 years or more right now.
Okay.
And what we, if BC Refed took power tomorrow, what we would do, well, very quickly, what we would do, we would, first of all, write a proper constitution approved by the people. We do not have one in BC right now. They use a Constitution Act, which was put together by the politicians, which explains why they can do what they like, and we don't have a say.
Mm-hmm.
We would have a proper constitution, and immediately we would pass a Direct Democracy Act, which gives the citizens the right to call a referendum at any time to veto legislation if they don't like the way the government is going.
Okay.
And also, they can sign, they have the right to call an initiative and actually propose legislation that the government will not pass. So that's a very powerful element of direct democracy, which we would add on to the present system.
Okay, okay.
And because of this, we are, of course, immediately in favor of Bill van der Zandt's Citizens Initiative, which is due to start in March. So okay. we helped them organize rallies around the province on the 19th of September, when they had the big one in Vancouver.
Okay, yeah.
Ever since then, we have been passing out the message to people that the HST is bad and we should veto it. And we want people to sign the petition, Bill van der Zandt's petition, in March.
Now, the website is fighthst.com. Is that what you said earlier?
That's Van der Zandt's website.
Okay.
A lot of information on there, a lot of good reasons why the HST is bad for the people.
Okay.
Of course, it's good for big business, but...
Okay, yeah. I want to get into the specifics of the HST. But first, if we can stay with this rally just a little bit, will Bill van der Zandt be at this one?
Nope, he's down in the States right now. He's on business.
Okay.
But we have invited quite a few people. We have confirmed speakers already, 5 confirmed speakers, and we still have a list of others that haven't replied yet.
Okay.
It will be on the lawn and the front steps of the legislature on Guy Fawkes Day, 5th of November.
Right, yeah.
Remember the 5th of November.
Yeah.
And... it starts at noon, and it could go an hour, 2 hours at the most.
Okay.
Rain or shine.
What are you getting? I don't imagine you're getting much support from the Liberal Party itself. What about the NDP? Has anyone agreed to come speak on behalf of the NDP party?
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay, good.
At Van der Zandt's rally, it was a non-partisan event.
Mm-hmm.
And they had all the parties there except Greens, and Greens are actually for the HST, believe it or not.
Hmm.
And the Liberals, of course, are for it. The other parties are against it. The independent Vicky Huntingdon spoke against the HST that day.
Okay.
And it was nonpartisan. Now, the rally we are holding, we don't care about it being nonpartisan. We're putting it on, and we're saying we're putting it on, and we're inviting everybody who wants to speak against it. And the more signs we have for different parties, the better.
That's right, yeah.
So, yes, Carol James has replied and said if she can make it in the noon hour that day, she will.
Mm, nice.
But that's only she's going to try. Now, the other leading NDP MLA is the Nanaimo NDP.
Yeah, yeah. Which is Leonard Krogh.
Leonard Krogh.
Thank
you. Can
you
believe it? I couldn't come up with his name. I've got my head stuffed full of all sorts of stuff. Leonard Krogh has accepted. He will come out during his noon hour and speak.
Oh, good for him.
We've got the president of BCQP who'll speak.
Mm, okay.
And a couple of concerned citizens are so mad that they want to speak.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And a couple of speakers from the BC Refederation Party.
Okay, nice. In the information you sent me prior to the show, you said that the BC Refederation Party is now the fifth largest party in BC. I'm guessing that means they got the fifth most amount of votes. What's the fourth? Who's the fourth party that is in front of you?
BC Conservatives by a whisker.
Okay, okay. And then the Greens, then the NDP and the Liberals.
Right.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, very nice.
The basis of the fourth largest is the fact that the number of candidates we ran.
Mm.
We started this party 8 years ago. Of course, we had no candidates when we started.
Yeah.
It's a huge job to start a new party.
Absolutely.
And after 4 years, we went into the 2005 election. We were still building, and we had five candidates there.
Mm-hmm.
In this last election, we had 22 candidates, finally, in the election. But at one stage just before, we had 50 nominee candidates.
Mm.
Because we advertised the party for the first time.
Okay.
Got a lot of response.
Nice, nice. Yeah, we certainly need a fresh party in here. You know, one that isn't corrupted by the power. You know, I'm not saying you guys won't get corrupt after 20 terms in office, but you're not yet. I'm hoping.
Well, I would like to point out to you, under the system I have just outlined previously,
okay,
that if we took power. Then, if we were elected to be the government of BC, we would not have the power. We would have the directive from the people to go ahead and govern this province.
Hmm.
But the power will be with the people, who can veto anything. If they veto NAFTA, they can do.
Hmm.
The government has to obey the result of a binding referendum.
Hmm. Boy, that sure sounds nice.
So we will not be corrupted by power, because we won't really have it.
Yeah. Well, good. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're not supposed to. So, okay. Well, very well. Now, why don't we move on into the harmonized sales tax? And if you can explain that to me, maybe in a kind of a general, simplified term, for myself as well, and then maybe we can dig a little bit deeper into some of the finer details. So if you can tell me, in a nutshell, what the HST is about, please do.
I will do that. I will do that. I've got a couple of notes here.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one is that the TD Economic Study back east has stated that under the HST in BC, whoops, I just pulled my headset off. I'm sorry, folks. Under the HST, business tax will go down by, and I'm quoting, business tax will go down by billions.
Hmm.
Now, of course, the BC government cannot afford to do without billions, so they're going to get it from somewhere,
mm-hmm.
And of course, the people will make up that difference. So business will benefit, large business will benefit, and I distinguish between large business, big business, and what we call small business. Small business is the backbone of our economy, and we're 100% behind them.
Mm-hmm.
Business will will gain, and the consumers are going to have to pay.
Yeah.
Because there will be an extra tax in here. Right now we pay BC sales tax, and we pay a GST. They are going to combine the two into the HST, and lots of things that right now are not taxed are going to be taxed.
Okay.
And
right.
You can get a list off that website I just gave you, and you can find just how much. People have studied this. Van der Zandt's organization actually asked the government to study it and release figures on how much they expect people will have to pay extra.
Okay.
And I have one figure here. That will make you smile. The government says that, for instance, old age pensioners will pay an extra $2 a year.
Hmm.
Because everybody else is putting the figure at $2,000 to $3,000 a year extra.
Wow.
And you can confirm that. You can get a list of the extra things that will be taxed, restaurant meals, and on and on and on. And you can find out how much you spend on those. You can add on, you can calculate 7%, and you'll find out pretty soon for yourself how much you're going to pay, and it's
okay.
A lot.
Now, is Ontario, is there not another province that is doing this already?
Ontario is about to harmonize their taxes with Ottawa. It's a different deal. They get a different deal from the feds.
Oh, okay.
Okay, but it's been in... harmonized taxes have been in the East, the Maritimes, for some time.
Okay, okay.
And, of course, they benefited because before where they were paying about 18% in provincial taxes and so on, after the HST was brought in, they were paying less.
Okay.
So they're rather happy about that.
Okay.
And in the case of BC, they're talking now that they will keep it at the same 12% level as we have now.
Right.
7% and 5% makes 12%. What they don't say is that so many extra things are going to be taxed that this is where we're going to pay.
Okay. Dennis Shaw of the BC Refed Party is who we're talking to. What is the Campbell government telling us to encourage us to get behind this? What are their selling points, and are they accurate, or are they full of it on their reasoning?
They're probably accurate because what they're offering. First of all, let me say, I believe the figure between $2,000 and $3,000 extra for everybody is probably the true one.
Okay.
I know it seems to be in my case. Now, the government is saying that to offset this, they will give people a once-only rebate of $200.
All right.
And that only goes to low-income people.
Uh-huh.
Most of us won't even get that.
Okay.
That's a little bribe, okay?
Yep,
and
yep.
Incidentally, talking about bribes, we are being bribed, and it's outrageous, with our own money. The federal government, the central government, of course, has no money. No governments have money. They take taxes from people. The federal government in this case is going to give the BC government $1.6 billion if we will implement this tax.
Hmm.
They call it a transition tax.
Okay.
Where do they get the $1.6 billion? It's from all the BC people in BC that don't want to pay this tax.
Right, yeah. Huh. So they're selling us back our own candy?
Exactly.
Okay. Okay. So what is the long term? Is this something we can see moving throughout Canada? Is that what?
Yes.
Might be happening?
Yeah. Yes, that's what they're eventually aiming for.
Okay.
Now, this brings in the biggest problem with the HST.
Okay.
Only the BC Refederation Party is saying this. Nobody else has brought this point up. It's a very serious one. This HST turns over control over BC tax policy to Ottawa.
Okay.
The central government is going to operate the HST. Right now, the central government is saying to us, and of course it's part of the bribe, it's only 12% and you're paying that right now. But there's no guarantee that they will keep it at that. They can raise it any time. And I should say this, that when a government, and people will probably realize this is common sense, when a government wants to make a move like this, they look around and they see what other countries have been doing what. So they looked at, BC Liberals looked at Europe, and they found a real gold mine there because most of the European countries are paying 16 and 17%
okay.
on this same deal, right?
Right.
Three countries are paying 25%.
Wow. Hmm.
So this is what's possibly ahead of us in the future, that they have control, they can raise the rate, and they could raise it to 25% if they want it to be like Europe.
Okay.
And just figure out how much extra. Oh, and that's extra. Listen, all this tax money I'm talking about is extra over the stuff we're paying now.
Okay. Yeah. So it seems to me that this seems to be a worldwide trend, but certainly in BC, from what I can tell, our healthcare system is being starved for cash. Our education systems are being starved for cash. Where can we go? I mean, what is the end game? Where is this Liberal government and others like them? Where are they going with this? Is it to basically privatize absolutely everything and collect taxes and basically not give much back, or where might this lead to?
Exactly what you said, because, and this is the reason why, that is the line put out by the IMF, the International Monetary Fund.
Mm.
And of course, as they say, the countries that get into trouble, we will, of course, give you loans and rescue you, provided you increase taxes and cut services.
Right.
Just as simple as that. And they've done it in country after country.
Yeah.
And that's, of course, this is what Campbell, the road Campbell is on. He's increasing taxes and he's cutting services. You can see it.
Yeah.
And he's privatizing everything.
Yeah.
I happen to believe that leaders who get into power in whatever country, because all the countries are the same, I happen to believe that they get into power because they have substantial help from behind the scenes.
Okay.
I'll just leave it at that.
Sure.
However, the price of being put in power is that you will then help those friends who helped you into power.
Right.
And so we have BC Rail sold off just when it was going to become profitable because they're going to open up the north. And we've got BC Hydro being carved up.
Mm-hmm.
Already the accounting division's been given off to a big multinational corporation in the West Indies.
Okay.
Incidentally, that corporation, I believe, has changed its name. Its previous name was Arthur Andersen. Arthur Andersen was the accounting company that was involved in the Enron disaster.
That's right, yeah. They got into a little bit of trouble for that. It doesn't seem that these big multinationals get into a lot of trouble. And, well, if they do, they just get bailed out again, it seems.
There you go, the bailout stuff.
Okay, so what else? What are other examples of what's not working for BC right now?
What more example did you want?
Well, we're talking about
covered it all, but I can tell you that there is an alternative possible, and I'll just have to give just a brief background on this so that the people can understand.
Okay.
And when you first hear it, you're absolutely unbelieving. And all I say is, if you don't believe me, then you go check the two documents, because you can find them on the net and you can read them very quickly.
Okay.
And you'll see the difference. I said that the biggest problem of the HST is that we're giving up control to Ottawa. We will close down the provincial tax department, and the next day it will open up again as a federal tax department.
Okay.
We're just giving away control in every direction.
Right, so it's centralizing power, yeah.
This is part, and this is what I want to point out, this is part of creeping control from Ottawa. I'll take you right back to the beginning of this country, what they call Confederation.
Okay.
At the time of Confederation, there were three provinces and no central government. It didn't exist. The Brits ruled us through the colonial office. The three provinces got together and decided it would be advantageous to have a small central government, and so they drew up a plan to create one. And, of course, the first thing you have to do is decide which powers you will give the central government and which powers provinces will keep. The number one power, obviously, is money. Money is the key to everything.
Okay, yeah.
The very first item that went on the list for the provinces to keep was direct taxation.
Okay.
For example, income tax and GST. They are direct taxes. They were supposed to be kept by the provinces. And on the list for the central government that they proposed to create, they put indirect taxes, customs and excise and fees and charges and things like that. This was drawn up in a document called the Quebec Resolutions, and the provinces then sent a delegation to London, England, to ask the Brits to pass some legislation to put this in effect. They sent a delegation to London, formed by mainly lawyers and bankers. When they got to London, they had a meeting in London, and they changed the wording of what the provinces had agreed to.
Okay.
The provinces had said this, that the provinces alone will have the right to direct taxation, and the central government will have the right alone, only to all other forms of taxation. Other. Hmm. Other than direct taxation.
Okay.
Okay. But they changed it. They took out the word other.
Hmm.
And so that is what is in the British North American Act still to this very day, that the central government can raise taxes by any means at all,
hmm.
because they missed out that word other.
Okay. Okay. Wow.
And I'll tell you, for the first 50 years, that was the intent, that the provinces be direct taxation and the feds would be forbidden direct taxation. For 50 years, first 50 years of this country's life, that's exactly what happened.
Okay.
And a lot of people will know this story, that during the First World War, the central government went to the provinces and said, to pay for this war, we need to have some direct taxation. Please, we propose to enter the field of direct taxation temporarily.
Yeah.
And, of course, they've never got out of it. We can't get them out of it. Now, that's the background. The alternative now is to go back to the original plan at Confederation so that the provinces can, only the provinces can collect direct tax.
Okay. Okay.
In other words, to go back to the original federation or to refederate. That's where this party's name comes from.
Okay.
What we would propose is that, phase it in slowly so that there's no chaos, we would slowly arrange to collect all direct taxation in BC. And it would be paid direct to the BC Treasury.
Hmm.
At that point, we have our hands on the money. And as you know, whoever has the money calls the shots.
Yeah, yeah.
And at first, we would pay this immediately to Ottawa so that they're still getting their direct taxation. But then we would start to negotiate with them. And if negotiations didn't work very well, we would say to them, well, look, this direct tax actually belongs to BC. We will start withholding this and this and this. And
mm-hmm.
so finally, we will keep all direct tax here. And Ottawa will not get it. Ottawa will not be able to waste our tax money. And, of course, Ottawa needs money to operate, so we would pay them. We'd say, you provide central government services to this province, bill us, and we will pay you.
Mm-hmm.
The rest we keep here. Now, that's where we will pay for our health and our education and all our social services. And I can also put a figure on this. Last time I looked at the national accounts was, oh, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. The amount of direct taxation, income tax only, I'm not counting GST in this figure.
Yes.
The amount of income tax we're sending to Ottawa is $12 billion a year. Now, that is exactly half of our total budget.
Hmm.
So if we were to keep that,
wow,
we would have another half
yeah.
added onto our income in BC. So it's kind of hard to explain this just a couple of minutes, but
Well,
that's what we intend to do.
Well, those are certainly lofty goals. Good luck on that. How is the media with BC Refed Party? Are they giving you a fair shake, or?
Well, the media is part of what we might call generally the establishment.
Okay.
The politicians and the judicial system and the military and, you know, all these things all go together. And generally, they call the establishment. Well, the media is definitely on the side of the establishment.
Yeah. Okay.
And, for instance, now any party that comes along like this idiotic BC Refederation Party and proposes to keep their taxes, damn it all.
You've got to be crazy.
You've got to be crazy. So what's happened so far is that they won't even mention our name. They won't say we exist or explain who we are or what we are or let people think for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But we're still expanding.
Sure. Well, good for you. There's a similar, however, it's a federal party, the Canadian Action Party. They don't get a fair shake. One of their big things is they want to get rid of the Bank of Canada as it exists today and make it truly a Bank of Canada instead of being, you know, owned and controlled by unknown international interests.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, money creation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Excuse me. So we have been speaking with Dennis Shaw, the president of the BC Refederation Party. They're putting on a demonstration at November 5th at the Victoria BC Legislature building on the steps there. So that goes from noon until 2 in the afternoon. That is a Thursday. Some websites that you might be interested in is, first off, the BC Refed, and they are at www.refedbc.com. That's refedbc.com. And the other one is fighthst.com. Okay, Dennis Shaw, is there anything else that you would like to mention? Have we left something out? You still have notes in front of you that you haven't covered yet? Where do you want to go?
Well, not really. I would like to say that the more people that turn up at this demonstration, if people listening to this are anywhere in the Victoria area, we know we've got support in every one of the 85 electoral districts. We know that.
Okay.
What I mean is we've got support of the people who are against the HST.
Gotcha.
So we've got 85 signs, one for each. We've got them made up, one for each electoral district.
Okay.
And we need people to hold the signs and wave them. And,
nice.
And also to come along, and if they don't know about the HST, to learn.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
One point I should explain here is we are putting on this rally. Even though the party's doing it alone, we're putting on the rally to support Van de Zandt's Citizens Initiative. That's the whole objective.
Okay, okay.
Because we really believe in that.
All right.
The people should have a say.
Absolutely.
And, what was I going to say? I talked myself right out of that one.
That's okay. Now, Van de Zandt, I was kind of surprised to see him kind of come out of nowhere again. Has he been in the background in BC politics, or did he just pop up due to this issue? What got him back in the press?
I don't know. I'm not privileged to inside information there at all.
Yeah.
I think I think as a former premier, he keeps his eye on what happens.
Yeah.
And this was just too much.
Okay.
And he's also, I don't know how he was when he was a premier, but he certainly sounds now like a man who is standing up for the ordinary person.
Mm.
He's the one that will tell you that we are going to pay all these extra taxes and big business will get rebates.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And this is why their taxes will go down. But what do they do with that money? The government, of course, will say, well, they'll pass it down. They'll lower prices. But can you imagine a corporation being handed all this tax money and then giving it back to the people? No, sir.
Yeah, not too likely.
They'll be paying their shareholders with it, shareholders from America and Japan and Europe.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We will be paying them.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah, very frustrating. So, let's hope that this doesn't happen and that our taxing doesn't become centralized in Ottawa, as you're suggesting will happen if this goes through.
I have thought of what I was talking about.
Oh, okay. Well, carry on then.
But just come back to that point there. We support the Citizens Initiative. I was just going to explain how it works.
Okay.
This is a BC law. It was brought in by the NDP government long ago. To actually tell you the truth about that, it was Van de Zandt's government at the time, the Social Credit government, that actually put a referendum on the election vote. It said to the BC people, do you want a system of direct democracy? And, of course, they did. Overwhelmingly, 85%. Every single electoral district in BC wanted it, and 85% of the people.
Okay.
But then he lost the election. So the referendum result was carried out by the NDP under Harcourt at the time.
Okay.
And they made one that initiative and recall legislation that is, the threshold is so high it is almost impossible.
Okay.
We've never recalled anybody, and nobody's even tried. It's so hard.
Okay, right.
Okay,
right.
But this citizens initiative now is under those regulations, and we, when we finally call it, and I believe Van de Zandt is going to call the initiative in March of next year, so it doesn't get in the way of Christmas or the Olympics.
Okay.
And when it starts, say it starts on the 1st of March, we have 90 days to collect 10% signatures in every electoral district.
Mm-hmm.
So that's quite a task.
Yes, indeed.
But they are well, Fight HSD is, Van de Zandt is well organized. They have captains, they call them, in each electoral district.
Okay.
And right now, they are asking people to volunteer to collect signatures.
Mm.
And what they need is about 50 people in each electoral district to say, yeah, I'll sign, I'll collect signatures.
Okay.
Because all you do is you take a piece of paper and you go around to people and say, do you like the HSD? No, sign here, bang, next one.
Right, okay.
And to collect 100 signatures is nothing,
yeah.
Absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be hard work or nasty because most people are, well, 85% of the people are against HSD and they will sign.
Right, right.
So we need people to volunteer.
Okay, good, good. And it sounds like, again, the website is fighthst.com.
That's where to volunteer, right?
Yeah, okay, very good. And if you want to learn more about the BC ReFed Party, their website, again, is refedbc.com.
And can I give a phone number? Because some people don't have access to computers.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
My phone number is 250.
Okay.
758.
Mm-hmm.
2089.
Okay, Dennis, so that's your home phone, 250-758-2089. Very good. Well, I would like to thank you for coming on and spending some time with us discussing the HST and the initiative you're putting together down in Victoria this, I guess it's not this Thursday, but the following Thursday.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dennis, for coming on and... if things get interesting with this HSC, I'd certainly like to have you back on and further explain what's going on.
Okay,
partner.
Thank you for having me.
Be well, indeed. Take care.
Goodbye.
Thank you, sir. Okay, there we are. That was Dennis Shaw, the president of the BC Refederation Party. Okay, so time-wise, we're just about at 9 o'clock. I'm going to put on a couple audio pieces here. Then before long, we've got the campus community update. That's coming up shortly. Actually, I've got something special for that. Someone's going to be calling in to talk about an event they're putting on. So actually, I'll be calling them. But okay, so what we're going to hear in for the next short while, a couple audio clips. This first one is a Democratic congressman from Florida. Alan Grayson is his name. Well, he sticks it to a Federal Reserve attorney about the role of the Fed. And, boy, this guy is a real firecracker. And like it says, he sticks it to this attorney from the Fed. Now, his first question is a little bit muddled. It's not completely clear, so I will tell you that how this audio clip starts. Has the Federal Reserve ever tried to manipulate the U.S. stock market? That is where the question starts. Okay, and after that, we're going to hear footage from the largest reenlistment ceremony in the history of the U.S. military. This took place this last summer at El Fah Palace in Baghdad, and the Pentagon is reporting that this is a record year for new recruits. So if there's no jobs, you can join the military. And in my little conspiratorial mind, I think that is just what they wanted. Imagine that. So let's move on to Alan Grayson, sticking it to the Fed, asking, has the Federal Reserve ever tried to manipulate the U.S. stock market? And then you get to hear some soldiers saying, I want more of this.
Okay, friends, we'll be back in a couple minutes. This is the Unbought and Unbossed show on CHLY. Stay tuned.
Federal Reserve ever tried to manipulate the U.S. stock market?
No, sir. Not that I'm aware of.
Not that you're aware of, but you're the attorney, right?
That's right.
So you might not even know, right?
I would expect to know if there were something like that being done. I'm not aware of that at all.
And if you did know, you'd be bound by attorney-client privilege, and you wouldn't be able to tell us, right?
Sir, if there were something the Federal Reserve were doing outside its legal authority, I would have an obligation to say something about that.
All right, so we agree that any participation by the Federal Reserve in the stock market or the futures market is outside the Federal Reserve's legal authority, right?
The Federal Reserve has some authority to regulate various aspects of markets and participate in markets in certain ways, so I think your question is too categorical, but...
I think not, actually. Why don't you answer it?
I don't know what would... I don't know. Your question is so overbroad, I don't know where to begin to answer that.
I don't think it's that overbroad. I'd like you to tell me whether it's within the Federal Reserve's legal authority to try to manipulate the stock market or the futures market.
So I don't... The Federal Reserve tries to manipulate the stock market
tries,
or the
come on.
No, so...
Do they?
The Federal Reserve's obligation and what it does in monetary policy is try to influence interest rates, and in that way to maximize employment and to stabilize prices.
Now, if in fact the Federal Reserve were trying to do that or doing it, isn't that something that we'd want to know?
And the extent that the Federal Reserve influences interest rates, it does make announcements of that decision immediately.
That's not what I said. I said manipulate the stock market or the futures market. Wouldn't we want to know? Yes or no?
Could you define what you mean by...
I think you know what I mean, Mr. Alvarez. Now, wouldn't it be very helpful to have a GAO audit on that subject? Wouldn't it?
I don't know what it is that you're seeking to audit, sir.
What
I
just said.
It would be helpful if you could...
Let's go on to something else, because the Federal Reserve actually possess all the gold that's listed on their balance sheet. Do they actually possess it?
Yes.
Has that been audited by the GAO?
I believe that's within the GAO's authority to audit. It certainly is something that our independent accountant is able to verify and does.
So if I go ahead and ask for GAO audit, you won't oppose it, right?
To auditing the presence of the gold on the facility? I don't see any reason to object to that.
Good. Now, there's been all sorts of claims of insider trading and front-running by the people who execute the trades for the Federal Reserve in the market. By the way, who is that? Who actually executes the trades for the Federal Reserve in the markets?
I haven't heard of any allegations of front-running.
Well, that's funny because you're the general counsel, so if anybody would know that, you'd think you would know about it.
The Federal Reserve Bank of New York is responsible for affecting the transactions implementing monetary policy.
Okay, so then answer the question.
The Federal Reserve Bank of New York.
That's your answer?
You wanted to know who implements...
You have people sitting in screen at the Federal Reserve Bank actually executing those trades. You don't delegate that to anyone else?
No, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, of course, it's a process where there's several steps. Federal Reserve Bank of New York executes transactions through primary dealers.
Who are the primary dealers?
So the list of primary dealers is on our website.
Do you know any of them? Can you name a single one?
Sure. JPMC.
Go ahead, what?
J.P. Morgan Chase.
Okay, do you mind if we have a GAO audit to see whether there's been front-running or insider trading by them? Do you mind? Is that okay with you?
No, I'm not sure I have any decision-making authority.
Well, you're the general counsel. I want to know if you're going to try to stop it.
GAO audits government agencies you want an audit of a private entity. I think that's something that Congress would have to change the authority of the GAO to allow.
All right. Now, let's say you're right. That's what we're doing right here, by the way. Let's say that the Federal Reserve gave $1 billion to a very promising fledgling institution called the Dick Cheney Savings and Loan, whose only asset is an unnumbered Swiss bank account. Don't you think it would be a good idea to have the GAO have authority to look into that?
So under the GAO authority as written, a loan by the Federal Reserve to a specific entity, say a particular bank, as you've pointed out, would be subject to GAO audit. We don't oppose that.
All right. Now, the Federal Reserve has given $1 trillion out. $1 trillion in the past 12 months. That's how much the increase in its assets and liabilities in the balance sheet has been. Who got the money? This, by the way, is a question sent to me by Beatrice Delgado. She just wants to know who got the money. Will you tell me?
So the most of the increase in our balance sheet has been the purchase of U.S. government securities and the purchase of agency guaranteed securities in the open market from market participants broadly.
And what about the rest of it?
Time has expired.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. But I really think we need answers to these questions, and the only way to get answers to these questions is to have the GAO audit the Federal Reserve. Thank you very much.
I just want to make the point that if the gentleman has more questions, there'll be an opportunity to submit them in writing. That opportunity will be available.
Raise your right hand and repeat after me. State your full name.
I
solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support and defend.
That I will support and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
Against all enemies.
Against all enemies.
Foreign and domestic.
Foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith.
That I will bear true faith.
And allegiance to the same.
I hate to break up this little party, but there's still a lot of bad guys out there.
Well, then let's go show the bad guys the police are back in force.
Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah.
America! 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 Fuck yeah! America! Fuck yeah!
Freedom is the only way, yeah.
The rest of your game is through, cause now you have something to do. America,
fuck yeah.
Lick my butt, suck on my America,
fuck yeah.
What you gonna do when we come for you now?
It's the dream that we all share. It's the hope for tomorrow.
Fuck yeah! Go Team America! Alright, that's pretty silly. That is from the movie Team America, World Police. Trey Parker, Matt Stone, and Pam Brady are the crazy people behind that. And then before that, we heard America's growth industry. And of course, it was audio footage of the largest reenactment ceremony in the history of the United States. And let's see, the Pentagon is reporting that it was a record year for new recruits. Thank goodness for a little unemployment, eh? Isn't that fantastic? And it was interesting in that pledge that they were giving. They were promising their support to the Constitution, but also to the president. How can you do both? That's kind of a confusing thing. I'm not too sure how that works. Okay, well, it is time for the campus community update, and I have a person on the phone who has an announcement that they're going to share with us. Mark? Very nice. Okay, there's our campus community update there. And for the first time officially, I would like to welcome a new business mention sponsor. This is Roberts Creek Vice, and they're reminding you that silence is complicity. Yes, indeed. So everyone go out and get a radio show, I guess. Also, I would like to thank the financial supporters of CHLY.
Let's see. We have warcriminalsout.com as well as falseflagflu.com. Very good. Okay, so those are the financial supporters of this station, and I want to thank them, and I have a feeling they understand the importance of independent media, and that's what you're getting here. So, thanks to them. Where are we going to go now? I've got, looking at the time, looking at what's left on my outline. I'm going to hit another audio clip or two here, and then we'll come back, and I have an article I might read, and I might get to this David Icke book talking about intuition, but I'll decide what I'm going to do while you're listening to these following audio clips. Now, this first one comes from, well, a rather controversial figure, Jane Burgermeister. She's an Austrian investigative journalist. Well, she filed criminal charges against the World Health Organization, the United Nations, and several of the highest-ranking government and corporate officials, charging them with bioterrorism and attempts to commit genocide. Now, this is talking about the World Health Organization's, you know, they put it at a level 6 pandemic, this H1N1, and so she's speaking out here, and she does have, some really good advice that can, transfer over to a couple different areas. And so the question being posed by Project Camelot, who recorded this interview, the primary question is how could or how will the state, you know, whether it's Canada or the States or another country, how will they enforce mandatory vaccines if, in fact, that is what is coming? And it appears that that is where we're pointing. And her answer to that is really quite impressive, and we'll talk a little bit about that when we come back. Okay, so then we're also going to hear a clip on cell phones, and you can buy lots of nifty little devices to spy on your friends and your not-so-loved ones, maybe your partner. You want to get them into trouble, find out what they're up to. Anyways, cell phones, probably not a good idea. I don't have one, and I don't plan on getting one, but they sure are popular. And, well, there's a lot of spying going on. This is a TV news clip, and it's from WTHR. So, yeah, this is awfully surprising about the cell phones. Now, speaking of cell phones, actually, so many of the topics that are covered, you know, week in and week out on this show, well, you have a chance to listen to them or listen to speakers on those subjects in person at this conference coming up. It's the 2009 Truth Convergence Project Uncensored. It is a 6-speaker conference on 6 different topics, but what they have in common is that, well, the information is urgent. And moreover, is that our governments and corporate mainstream media either ignore or distort the information, this vital information. So I told you some of the topics earlier. Let me tell you who the presenters are. It's being broken up into 2 halves, and there'll be an hour break in between. So in the first half, Nick Veristeg, a documentarian talking about food security issues. Then Wayne Pronte, a researcher and organizer, and he's going to be looking at the H1N1 false flag flu and the vaccine agenda. Then, thirdly, Will Thomas. He's a author and lecturer. He's going to be speaking on cell phones and the danger of them and the danger of this wireless revolution that we're in right now. And the second half of the event, we're going to hear Kevin Annett, who's a regular to this show. The former minister turned whistleblower will be speaking on genocide, both local and global. Also, Paul Grignon, another documentarian. He created the smash hit Money as Debt, and he's going to be speaking on money, jailer or liberator. And lastly, Splitting the Sky, the Mohawk activist, writer, and actor. He's the fellow who, he got arrested for trying to place George Bush under citizen's arrest. That happened in March of this year. He's going to be speaking on exposing the Bush-Cheney cabal and war criminals past and present. So those are the six speakers. It is $20 for the all-day event. If you only want to take in the first or the second half, it is $12. Tickets are at the door. And there you go. I think I told you, you pay your pledge that you made during one of my pledge drive shows last, well, I guess it was this month, and you're getting in for half price. So there we are. Okay, so let us move on to the Jane Burgermeister talking about how the state may or may not enforce mandatory vaccines, and then looking at cell phone spying, what people can purchase out there to spy on us. Okie dokie, so let's do that, and we'll be back shortly after that. You're listening to the Unbought and Unbossed show on CHLY. Talk to you shortly.
Some people have written to us and they said, look, you're not going to have a policeman with a gun knocking on your door accompanied by a doctor with a syringe. They haven't got the resources to do that. How actually could they enforce it if they wanted to? How could it happen? What would be the sanctions which they have?
Well, the French government released or circulated to the heads of departments an internal document of 19 pages which outlined quite clearly their method. And this is what I assume is happening in every country. They're going to set up vaccine centers that are outside hospitals and GPs. Some of these are going to be secure. People are going to be told to go there, first of their own free will, and then they're going to receive calls, whatever, telling them to appear at a certain time. And those people who do not come are going to eventually be collected and forced to go there.
Do the resources exist to actually do that? Because you're talking about transporting and enforcing and rounding up and making contact with hundreds of thousands of people.
Absolutely. If so many people refuse, it will be impossible. But if they are assuming that the vast majority of people will either go of their free will, or when they get the call from, say, a police authority telling them to appear or the notification, they will go reluctantly, but they will still obey that call. And the number of people who will actually refuse to go and stay at home when they're informed it's a criminal offence not to go will be very small, and it will be a criminal offence not to go. However, if it turns out that hundreds of thousands and millions refuse to go, then they cannot carry it through. And that's why it's important for every single person to say no and not to go along with it.
After 4 months of harassing phone calls, Heather and Courtney Kuykendall were afraid to answer their cell phones.
You are so dead.
The graphic, violent threats came at all hours, forcing the family to change their cell phone numbers. But even that didn't work.
They said they were going, you know, to rape her.
The Kuykendalls were featured on NBC's Today Show after anonymous stalkers literally took control of the family's cell phones and began following their every move.
Text to landline message. We are going to start coming every night. You just might not know when. We're looking at you.
They're listening to us and recording us. We know that because they will record us and play it back as a voicemail.
So how is this possible? Just take a look at the internet. That's where you'll find the latest spy technology for cell phones. Marketers claim you can tap into someone's calls, read their text messages, and track their movements anywhere, anytime. They say you can catch a cheating spouse, protect your children, and hear what your boss is saying about you. And they'll never know, because it's supposed to be completely invisible, with absolutely no trace.
This stuff's pretty creepy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Rick Mislin is a former military intelligence officer who now runs the cyber forensics lab at Purdue University. He's examined thousands of cell phones and says spy software can now make even the most high-tech phone vulnerable.
I think a lot of people think their cell phone calls are very secure.
Our privacy isn't always what we think it is.
And you don't have to take his word for it. Just ask Cindy Abair. Cindy is a producer at Channel 13, and with her permission, I've installed spy software onto her cell phone.
Hi, it's me. What are you doing?
While Cindy's at home making phone calls to her family.
Have you guys thought any more about...
I'm through here to... Can you help us before?
Yeah, it'll be a long time.
I'm outside on my cell phone listening to the whole conversation.
Whenever you make it through, we'll be here.
And there's more. Every time Cindy makes or receives a call...
I went to snooze. This is Cindy.
My cell phone lets me know. It's a text message telling me she's on the phone so I can call in and listen. On my computer, I also get a copy of her text messages. I can see the phone numbers of all her incoming and outgoing calls, and no matter where Cindy is with her cell phone, I get constant satellite updates on her location. I can literally track Cindy anywhere she goes. And I'm just getting started. Take a look at this.
Especially if she's already, you know, thin and little.
Cindy doesn't even have to be using her cell phone for me to hear what she's doing. Even if her cell phone is just sitting on a table or attached to her purse, I can activate the speaker on that phone and secret-listen in.
So what are the rules for listening in?
That means while Cindy is meeting with our station attorney up on the 36th floor of that downtown building...
And does their intent matter?
I can hear their conversation even though I'm 4 miles away. I'm eavesdropping on them from the city's north side. And I can hear every word.
Where did they... Yeah, as long as you can do all those kind of things, you can use that as evidence.
Doing this without someone's permission is illegal, but it's still happening.
The technology is there. It's been there for a long time. It's accessible. It's done all the time.
Tim Wilcox is a private investigator in Indianapolis. He says people really are using cell phone spy programs, and every day he gets letters and emails from those needing help.
There's only two people. One wants to bug somebody, and the other has been bugged and is worried about how it's being done and how to find out and how to stop it.
The harassment did stop for the Kuykendalls, but only after they brought in police and the FBI. While authorities never figured out who hijacked the family cell phones, security experts say the case serves as a powerful lesson for the rest of us.
Your privacy isn't your privacy. You know, it is exposed. It is exploited.
So, how can you protect yourself? Well, for starters, don't just leave your cell phone lying around where anyone can get to it. Install a password on here to prevent others from accessing your phone. And when you're not using it, go ahead and turn it off and actually take out the battery. We've got more tips for you at WTHR.com. I'm Bob Siegel, Channel 13, Eyewitness News.
Okay, there we are, friends. Brent and Wolfie show, fantastic. Okay, so what did we hear? We heard Jane Burgermeister, and she's calling for massive civil disobedience, you know, and where she's going with that is that, you know, there is way more of us than there is of stormtrooper cops that are going to come take you away if you don't get a jab of poison in your arm. And that's, I think, pretty good advice. You know, they don't have enough place to lock everyone up, you know, and I really think that there's something to that, you know, massive civil disobedience. And then we also heard a piece by WTHR-TV on cell phone spying. That's a pretty frightening possibility there. Well, it's not a possibility, it's a reality. Okay, well, let's carry on. I have an audio clip here from a movie, one of my favorite movies from this last year, and it's Woody Allen's Vicky Cristina Barcelona. And Woody Allen is the writer and director. And the people in this scene is featuring Scarlett Johansson, Rebecca Hall, and Javier Bardem. And while this isn't political in nature, it's a pretty damn entertaining movie making. And so well done, Woody. So maybe it's talking about the politics of relationships and politics of sex and good stuff like that. So I hope you enjoy that. And then I'm going to give you another audio clip, and this is G. Edward Griffin. interviewing Yari Bezmenov. Now, G. Edward Griffin is probably most famous for his book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, about how the Federal Reserve came to be. So in this interview, which was made in 1985 with Yuri, who is a former KGB agent who was trained in subversion techniques, and he explains the four basic steps to socially engineering entire generations into thinking and behaving the way those in power want them to. And it's shocking because our nation has been transformed in the exact same way. And the following steps, the steps are demoralization, destabilization, crisis, and normalization. Thanks to Chris for that one. So let's move on to a clip from Vicky Cristina Barcelona, and then G. Edward Griffin talking with a former KGB agent trained in subversion techniques. Okay, friends, be well.
Vicky and Christina left the art gallery and decided to go for dinner. They strolled past the church in the wonderful summer night air while people celebrated, finally winding up around midnight at a little restaurant.
Well, it's just nice to be able to not have to worry about if some place is going to stay open. Or...
Yeah, but we probably should be worrying about our dreams.
Who are you looking at?
Isn't that the painter that we just saw at the gallery?
Oh, yeah, right. He's the painter with the bad divorce. Yeah. Mark told us it was half listening.
He keeps looking over here.
Well, that's because you keep provoking contact.
I'm not provoking contact.
Why are you been throwing little looks at him all night?
I'm just drinking my wine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course you are. You must be doing something because he's coming over.
American?
I'm Christina, and this is my friend Vicky.
What color are your eyes?
They're blue.
I'd like to invite you both to come with me to Oviedo.
To come where?
To Oviedo. For the weekend. We leave in 1 hour.
What? Where is Oviedo?
A very short flight.
By plane?
Mm-hmm.
What's in Oviedo?
I go to see a sculpture that is very inspiring to me. Very beautiful sculpture. You'll love it.
Oh, right. You're asking us to fly to Oviedo and back.
No, we'll spend the weekend. I mean, I'll show you around the city and we'll eat well, we'll drink good wine, we'll make love.
Yeah, who exactly is going to make love?
Hopefully the three of us.
Oh, my God.
I'll get your bill.
Jesus, this guy, he doesn't beat around the bush. Look, senor, maybe in a different life.
Why not? Life is short. Life is dull. Life is full of pain. And this is a chance for something special.
Right. Well, who exactly are you?
I am Juan Antonio. And you are Vicky. And you are Christina, right? Or is it the other way around?
Yeah, but, yeah. You know, it could be the other way around because, frankly, it doesn't matter because either of us will do to keep the bed warm. You know, I get it.
Well, you're both so lovely and beautiful.
Yeah, thank you, but we do not fly off to make love with whoever invites us to charming little Spanish towns.
Does she always analyze every inspiration until each grain of charm is, squeezed out of it?
I guess I have to say that my eyes are green, actually.
Oh, God. Look, I wouldn't call our reluctance to leap at your sexual offer being over-analytical. If you would care to join us for some recognized form of social interaction like a drink, then we'd be fine. But otherwise, I think you should try, you know, offering to some other table.
What offended you about the offer? Surely not that I find you both beautiful and desirable.
Offended me? No. It's very amusing, galling, to be honest. But Is it my imagination or is it getting a little late? Should we go?
I'd love to go to Oviedo.
What? Are you kidding?
I think it would be so much fun. I think we should go. I would love to go.
Christina, can we discuss this some other time? When?
You know, when I saw you across the room at the art gallery, I noticed you have beautiful lips. Very full, very sensual.
Thank you.
Okay, look, if you want to go...
Well, I can't guarantee the lovemaking because I happen to be very moody.
Let's not negotiate like a contract. I came over here with no subterfuge and presented my best offer. Now I hope you will discuss it and give me the pleasure to take you with me to Oviedo. I have the good fortune to borrow my friend's plane. It's just big enough for the three of us, and I'm a very good pilot.
Oh, it sounds very safe.
Think it over.
I hope you're joking about going.
My God, this guy is so interesting.
Interesting? You're kidding? What's so interesting? He wants to get us both into bed. Yeah, but he'll settle for either, in this case, you.
Vicky, I'm a big girl, okay? If I want to sleep with him, I will. If not, I won't.
Christina, he's a total stranger. This is impulsive even for you. And, if I heard right, he was violent with his wife.
Well, at least he's not one of those factory-made zombies, you know? I mean, this would be a great way to get to know him.
No, it's not. I'm not going to Oviedo with this charmingly candid wife beater. You find his aggressiveness attractive, but I don't. He's certainly not handsome.
Well, I think he's very handsome. He's got a great look. I mean, he's really sexy.
Mm-hmm. Well, you would, because you're neurotic.
Look, you got to admire his no-bullshit approach.
What are you talking about? It's all bullshit. I'm not going to Oviedo. First off, I never heard of Oviedo. I don't find him winning. Third, even if I wasn't engaged and was free to have some kind of dalliance with a Spaniard, I wouldn't pick this one. Hello? Hi. Oh, hi. I can't talk right now. I'm trying to save Christina from making a potentially fatal mistake. What? No, the usual. Yeah, I'll call you back. I love you, too.
If we go back to the house now, we can just throw some things in a bag and then we'll meet him there. Look, I took an instant liking to this guy. I mean, he's not one of these cookie-cutter molds. You know, he's creative and he's artistic.
Cookie-cutter mold? Is that what you think of Doug?
Doug? Who said anything about Doug?
It's ridiculous. You like the way it sounds to pick up and fly off in an airplane.
I don't know why I'm so scared unless I'm scared myself.
It's a mistake, Christina.
Ooh, famous last words. It's a mistake, Christina. I'm not going to tell you how the movie ends. Wait, I can tell you that during the filming of that movie, Vicky Christina Barcelona, Javier Bardem and, what's her nuts, that pretty skinny girl. Apparently they're an item. What the heck is her name? Son of a gun, I can't remember. It doesn't really matter. She's an actress. And so I'm actually waiting for a phone call from Wayne Pronte of False Flag Flu. And, oh, incoming call. Here it is. Hey, Wayne, you on the phone?
Howdy.
Hey, good timing. How you doing tonight, buddy?
Oh, not too bad.
There you go. So, yeah, you say you have a little bit of news and information to pass on, so let's do that.
Sure. Well, first off, yeah, I'm looking forward to being part of your event over there, and it's kudos to you, man, for putting that on. It sounds like it's going to be a hell of a deal.
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of positive feedback.
Awesome. Yeah. I've got it mentioned on falseflagflu.com as well as on canadiansforhealthfreedom.org.
Very nice.
And just for the benefit of any of your mainland listeners, there's two events coming up next week in Vancouver regarding the flu, H1N1 flu and vaccine issues.
Okay.
That I hope everybody in listening range will get out and support. Very important stuff. Wednesday, that's next Wednesday, unfortunately it's going to cut into your show, Raymond, but Wednesday, November 4th, 2009, in Sapperton Hall in New Westminster, B.C., that's right by Royal Columbian Hospital.
Okay.
The Knowledge Exchange is presenting the WHO Flu Scam, which is a documentary, and will be introduced by Inga Hanley.
Excellent.
Okay, so that's Sapperton Hall, 317 Currie Street, New Westminster. Doors open at 6. Inga's Big intro starts at 6:30, and the film starts at 7 p.m. sharp.
Okay, very nice. Now, is this a recent film? Is it concerning this most recent?
Yes.
Okay, very nice. I haven't seen it yet.
And then there is on Saturday, a week from this Saturday,
okay.
On November the 7th, 7 p.m., Spec Hall. The Vaccine Resistance Movement presents Hard Facts About H1N1 and Vaccines, featuring Dr. Chris Shaw, UBC scientist, John Hamill of International Advocates for Health Freedom, as well as Candace Hill from our group, Canadians for Health Freedom, Joel Lord, and yours truly will be on hand as well, okay, and possibly a few others.
Very nice.
Okay, so that's going to be at Spec Hall, which is at 2150 Maple Street, Vancouver, BC, near 6th and Burrard. Admission is, we're asking for $5 at the door as a minimum donation.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Very nice. Now, is that where the Vancouver Truth Conference was? Is that the same building?
No. This is only a small place. It maybe holds 50, 60 people at the most.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. It's not that big.
Right.
No, that place is expensive.
Yeah.
We couldn't do that on short notice.
Yeah.
No way. And fill it up too.
Nice.
So it would cost a hell of a lot more.
Right.
So $5 at the door. That's November 7th, Spec Hall. Okay.
Okay, very nice.
You can go to if you missed that. If you haven't got a pen handy, just go to falseflagflu.com and click on the events link at the very top of the page, and you'll see it there.
Okay. Nice.
And by the way, we're coming up to 60,000 hits in 3 months now on that site.
Very nice.
It's just going ballistic lately.
Awesome.
Canadians for Health Freedom is also going great. We've got all kinds of new stuff up there that people should be aware of, and I'm going to be posting something shortly, hopefully tonight, just waiting for somebody else to add something to it, and it's about the Canadian version of the vaccine that they're putting out, made by, of course, GlaxoSmithKline, GSK. They're calling it Arapanrix. I call it the Panda Matrix.
Yeah. Huh.
And it will be listing all the different ingredients and so on that are in there. So watch for that.
Yeah, good. You sent me a fascinating piece this last week. An editor from the National Post, that the king of propaganda in Canada here, this Michael Fomento, actually gave some pretty good information talking about what the heck is the World Health Organization declaring this H1N1 a pandemic when, the numbers do not come close to being one.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It just backs up everything I've been saying all along. Fuento, I believe is his name. He doesn't work for them. He doesn't write for them. I don't think that they pay him a penny.
Oh, okay.
I think he was just doing a guest editorial piece. He's written for a number of big outfits.
Right.
And then he does get some of his stuff posted occasionally. And
okay.
Fortunately, this is one.
Well, yeah, that's rather refreshing to see, something close to our alternative reality appear in, a corporate hit piece paper.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, it's just been going crazy this past week. They've released the vaccine for the H1N1. They weren't supposed to. They were originally saying they weren't going to do it until November, but then she made the health minister, Egelkak or whatever name, she made a big 180 turn and went ahead with it. And of course, now they've got their poster boy for the flu shot. Now that a young 13-year-old died in Toronto the other day, and they immediately went ballistic with that and putting out the information that this boy died of the flu and all this sort of stuff, but none of that is proven whatsoever. And the symptoms that he had, having read through the number of articles on that, the symptoms that he had are actually very similar to meningitis, and that's probably what happened.
Mm-hmm.
We're just waiting for a coroner's report on that.
Right.
So, but they've now got their poster boy. It's out there. And, of course, people are now going to line up like sheep, dutiful sheep, and get their shot of fear from this, right?
Right. So. Hey, what do you make on last week, President Obama declared a national emergency over this H1N1?
Yeah, it's pretty sick, man. And that's what, I mean, I've been predicting that for a long time, too, because of the international health regulations and pandemic level 6 that they came out with on the 11th of June, swine 11, 2009, and just waiting for Harper to do the same here. They had a secret meeting about 2.5-3 weeks ago in Mexico that very few people knew about. I happened to come across an article that was posted in India, of all places, to find that information.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing about it here in North America whatsoever.
Right.
And so at that point in time, I was saying, "Oh, you watch it. Something's up. Something's brewing." And sure enough, last Friday, late Friday night, after the media's all gone home, he announces a pandemic emergency or a national emergency because of the alleged pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the media, when they did cover it, they were playing it all down, saying it had nothing to do with, you know, giving the Secretary of Health extra money to, you know, if they need to open up hospitals with, you know, put up tents outside for mass vaccinations and all those kind of stuff, right?
Right.
But, of course, the reality is that it's basically tantamount to martial law. They can now do anything that they pretty much want.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So, you know, I would be very much on the alert for Harper to be also declaring a pandemic emergency in Canada in the next while.
Right.
Folks, all you have to do is just look at the stats. I mean, the last time I looked a week or so ago, it was like 80 people across Canada officially attributed, you know, deaths to H1N1, which was peanuts. And if you look at all those stories, you see that all those people have underlying health conditions, right? And it's just a bunch of malarkey. So,
mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. You know, I'm with you on that one.
Do your research.
Good words, good words.
Go to falseflagflu.com, get the facts.
There you go. Yeah, well, I've been pushing that the Dr. Lake show, a psychologist was speaking with a medical doctor, and I jumped in. They were discussing H1N1, and she asked the doctor whether or not he was going to get the flu shot, and he said that he was not, and the reason being is that he didn't want to be a guinea pig on, you know, and basically an untested or unproven, certainly, vaccination.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I phoned in, and I gave a little bit of information on, you know, we're at, you know, close to 90 deaths when, you know, in a normal year in Canada, it's, you know, closer to 3,000 deaths. So, you know, we're not even in the same ballpark. And, you know, calling this a pandemic is just,
right.
Is not okay.
Yeah. And now, does she, is that show on CHLY?
On Tuesday nights. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that was nice. Yeah.
All right. By the way, I'm going to be guest hosting, or at least co-hosting, with Reginald Argue tomorrow afternoon on Co-op Radio in Vancouver.
Oh, okay.
CFRO 101.7 FM.
102.7.
102.7 FM in Vancouver. And the special guest will be Dr. A. Truott, who is probably the best researcher, premier researcher on the H1N1 issues.
Okay.
And has been for even before that regarding the bird flu and so on.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely crucial information. I've got a number. If you're not sure of who he is, if you go to pulsebackfood.com, scroll down to near the bottom there, the audio links. I've got a number of archive shows of his on there. Very fascinating guy. Excellent. Brilliant researcher.
Right. Very nice.
Yeah.
Okay, my friend. Wayne Pronte of False Flag Flu, thanks for the updates. And so a couple events coming up in the Vancouver area this coming week. So thank you for passing that on.
You're welcome, and looking forward to seeing you again in a month from now.
That's right. Right on, buddy.
Okay.
Very well. Take care, partner. Good day.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay, very nice, Wayne Pronte. He's one of the big shakers in the anti-mandatory vaccine movement, and good for him. And, you know, he was onto this flu problem right quick, and, well, he's bringing together a lot of people, and good for him. So he will be speaking at the Truth Convergence Conference, November 29th, here in Nanaimo. 6 speakers, all-day event, nice and cheap, $20. And, yeah, there we are. Now, unfortunately, I don't have enough time to play... what I was hoping to, the G. Edward Griffin interviewing Yuri Bezmenov on subversion techniques. So that is that. Where are we going to go? I do have a couple other short little audio comedy clips here. Well, the first one's a comedy one, so maybe that's how we're going to finish off the show tonight. So I would like to thank all the listeners for tuning in, as well as Dennis Shaw, who was on in the first hour of the show, the president of the BC Refederation Party, talking about the anti-HST rally in Victoria next Thursday, November the 5th, at the legislature building between noon and 2 p.m. So that was my guest there. And, yeah, I think that's going to do it for tonight, friends. So this has been the Unbought and Unbossed show. Of course, you're on CHLY at 101.7 FM. We're also online at www.chly.ca. So, yeah, the Unbought and Unbossed show will say goodnight to you. I'm your host, Raymond. If you would like to listen to previous episodes or find out what was on, you know, what article I read from, who the guest was, as well as, you know, many internet links to continue on your investigation into contemporary history as it's going down. So you can visit. let me give you that website. It's unbossed.livejournal.com. Unbossed.livejournal.com. I also have a full description of the presenters for this 2009 Truth Convergence Conference. So you can get all the details there. And, okay, well, there we are. So that was unbossed.livejournal.com. And where are we going to go? We're going to, I've got a comedy piece by Monty Python. This is from their movie Holy Grail. And then we're going to hear, what are we going to hear? I'll play a song called The Cause of Death by Immortal Technique. So that will finish off tonight's show, and we'll do it again next week. Okay, friends? Take care.
Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how do you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here! Oh! How'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people, I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you. We're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who do you think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur.
That is why I'm your king. Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony. Be quiet. Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system. Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Do you hear that? Do you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Do you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?